From a quarantined studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, the Trump administration has ordered the Department of Housing and Urban Development to suspend all foreclosures and evictions until April for those homeowners whose mortgages are backed by the federal government. The suspension affects only a small number of people nationwide, however. In California, where a massive housing crisis has evolved over years, fears that the coronavirus will make the situation even worse has prompted Governor Gavin Newsom to sign an executive order on the issue. But Newsom's order simply frees local governments to take steps to enact their own eviction bans. In Los Angeles, there are a dozen documented cases of people taking over empty housing, citing fears over COVID-19. My guest is Leah Simon-Weisberg, legal director for anti-displacement and land use programs with the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. Welcome to the program, Leah.
Thank you.
So let's first talk about what's being done nationally. Obviously, the situation where housing is concerned is not even. It's geographically, you know, disparate depending upon which city, which state you live in. But overall, Americans do struggle with housing. What does Ben Carson's order, as per the Trump administration, actually mean? How many people would it impact nationally?
Well, we don't really know the answer in terms of the number of folks, because the information we've been getting from the federal government has been pretty vague. They're talking about certain kinds of mortgages, so folks who have foreclosures with certain kinds of products that the government is in charge of. So we believe that there are a lot of loans that are targeted at low-income folks, and it has been concerning because both in the earlier foreclosure crisis and then essentially the second wave that we're experiencing now, there have been really, really high rates with the federal administration, housing loans. So it's, and the other thing is they haven't been very public about the numbers. And because we are not as conscious that there is this wave of foreclosures, we haven't been seeing the numbers as publicly. But it's still good, right? It's still, there are going to be people there who are going to be helped. But it certainly is not a moratorium. And I think that that's one of the concerns we've been seeing in general, both from Governor Newsom here, as well as the Trump administration, is that there'll be these sweeping statements, and then when you read the fine print, it's not providing any of those protections. So it's not going to help a lot at all. And I think that that's one of the big concerns, and people are really struggling with getting enough information.
Yeah, let's talk about California, where we've had the severe housing crisis, so much so that the Trump administration has targeted the state of California, used its housing crisis to attack the state, made all sorts of threats. Late last year, Governor Newsom signed a whole slew of bills. And then, as I mentioned, he signed this executive order after the pandemic, news of the pandemic hit. But as you said, it sounds like he made a very strong statement, and that could actually affect a lot of, if not, most Californians, but the devil is in the details. So now we're seeing and realizing that essentially all he did was tell local governments, city governments, that they can enact eviction bans if they want.
Right. I mean, it really was a non-order. It was basically a restatement of what the law is now. I would say that the exception is that he did say that you can pass protections for commercial tenancies. That's new, because up until the governor did that, essentially you could not pass those kinds of protections. It's basically illegal in California to provide any protections for commercial tenancies. So that's one piece. But I think that one of the big concerns we're seeing is that the only actions he's taking is essentially for the business community, and really did nothing for residential tenants. The other thing he did was he very narrowly said that if you do these narrow protections, then you can't get sued for it. And a lot of jurisdictions are misinterpreting that to mean that that's all you can do. So obviously, you know, that isn't the case. And right now, every jurisdiction in California can pass a complete, you know, bar to all evictions during the this emergency. And I think what's really concerning, though, is that the governor's failure to do that himself has really created a situation where in California, every single tenant, first off, has no idea what protections they have. And then it's going to really depend on their local communities, despite the fact that most jurisdictions aren't even meeting, that city councils aren't meeting because either a majority of the people in city council are at risk and can't gather, or that they don't even have the, you know, technology to do, you know, Skype meetings. So basically what's happening is you've got a lot of city managers across the state that have certain kinds of authority and on their own are passing things or not passing things. So and it's a real concern.
Right. I want to talk about some leaders that have done that. But let's actually step back and discuss the difference between evictions over failure to pay your mortgage if you're a homeowner versus failure to pay your rent if you're a renter. What is the link between them? When we talk about the housing crisis, there are, you know, different aspects of the housing crisis in California, right?
Those are absolutely linked. And I think that what's really of concern is that the governor didn't even order the banks to delay moving on foreclosures. He again asked them nicely if they wouldn't mind assisting. And again, that's of concern. And I hope that we don't repeat all of the mistakes of, you know, the 2008 foreclosure crisis, where, you know, essentially the banks could do whatever they wanted and got bailed out and then proceeded to evict and, you know, foreclose, evict everybody. And then, you know, we've seen the stockpiling of foreclosed properties that ended up with big corporations who are now part of why rents are so expensive. How is it connected to tenants? I mean, I think because, you know, it's all about housing and whether people can afford. In many situations, a mortgage is the same price as renting. And so it's really all about working folks barely making it and having to worry about displacement. I think that, you know, the mechanisms can be a bit different. And I think that we need to look at, you know, what, you know, kind of what's going to happen after the crisis and how we pick up the pieces. And that may look different. But I think, yeah, I mean, even, you know, small landlords are going to be in a difficult situation if their tenants aren't able to pay. So I think that we need to make sure that not only are foreclosures, not only are evictions paused, but also foreclosures, absolutely.
Right. Somebody who might be renting out a studio or has a very small unit, that's their source of income. If they don't get the rent from their renters, they can't pay their mortgage, et cetera. It does trickle down. Let's talk about what some leaders have done. San Francisco Mayor London Breed has used a local emergency declaration to prevent landlords from evicting any resident who's unable to pay pay rent as a result of losing their income caused by the pandemic. It is, I understand, a 30-day moratorium on evictions, but it could be extended. What do you make of what Mayor Breed has done?
Well, I think first off, it was Supervisor Dean Preston who I think passed that legislation. I think it's very limited, and I am concerned because that is the pattern we're seeing around the state where that's what folks are doing, that's the only protections they're providing. I think it's really important that we actually do a full just bar on evictions. And then I think that we need to say that if you couldn't pay your rent during this period, that rent can continue to be a debt, a consumer debt though. And that won't lead to evictions. And then as a community, we're going to have to figure out how do we make sure that, people don't lose their apartment buildings. You know, it doesn't help anybody for these properties to go into foreclosure. But I don't think it's, you know, we need to be looking at it equally, whether it's a big corporate owner, for example, or, a duplex, you know, as we were talking about before. It's not a bad thing for us to say, hey, don't do this. You're not allowed to evict people because they can't afford to pay rent, but it's not enough. It really only just delays the situation. Also, I would say that the language in some of these ordinances require tenants to go above and beyond and do things they can't do. You know, they have to get documentation from their bosses that they couldn't pay. But, you know, there are situations where people have been offered jobs and then now they've been delayed for 3 or 4 weeks. So they didn't have money before, but they were planning on it and they were relying on it. But they never got those jobs. So are they supposed to say, we were going to hire you? And, you know, we need to make this very simple. And this is why the governor absolutely needs to just put a bar on evictions until the order is over, particularly the shelter in place. I mean, we also are seeing people who are supposed to be moving out by orders of courts because they've settled eviction cases and they can't find any housing because they are stuck in their apartments to keep
right. I understand eviction courts are not grinding to a halt, although many other things are.
Again, this is why it's really concerning that the governor has not taken you know, more clear positions and really fixed the situation for the whole state. So in Alameda County, in you know, San Francisco, as of I believe it was Tuesday afternoon, you know, some of these courts are closed. But that was because of enormous amount of pressure put on by local advocates. But that was hours and hours that we should have been spending doing other things. But the majority of the courts in the state are still open and people are being evicted right now. And we have a few sheriffs that have said, I'm not evicting during this time. And that includes San Francisco, Alameda, Contra Costa. And there are a few other across the state, but that's not enough. Every single person, every single sheriff should not be doing that. And that's really only going to come down when the governor says, I'm declaring you're not allowed to do this for now.
What has Berkeley done? I understand that Berkeley has taken some action recently.
Yes, Berkeley did something similar to San Francisco's in that it said you can't be evicted. It basically created an eviction defense when you know, everybody goes back to being able to evict people in the courts, that if it's a defense, if you're able to show that there was a nexus with COVID for why you can't pay. And they also were the first in the nation and first, well, in California, now that they're allowed to pass protections for commercial tenancies as well. So that was really important and they acted very quickly. And I really, you know, praise, you know, the city council for doing that. And I understand it was the mayor that really acted on that quickly. They also said you cannot do any no cause evictions. So for example, an owner move-in. I think that one of the disappointing parts though, is it still allows for other reasons. So we know that as late as, Wednesday, there were families with long-term tenancies with evictions for, you know, the landlord was claiming that they had a dog and they weren't allowed to have a dog on their contract and are getting evicted, which is a very classic kind of excuse landlords use when they're trying to get long-term tenants out of rent-controlled buildings. So that family's not going to get any protections. But from a health and safety perspective, it's not any more concerning to have that family at risk and potentially homeless.
Now, in Southern California, which has also a huge crisis of housing, we have a very large homeless population that's directly linked, of course, to the housing crisis. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti says that he estimates a huge number of homeless people in Los Angeles could be directly impacted by the coronavirus, you know, tens of thousands of possible infections if proper precautions aren't being taken. He's announced the conversion of recreation centers to house people and to increase the number of shelter beds. But interestingly enough, it looks like in Los Angeles, aren't waiting around for government to take action. Recently, there have been some incidents of folks taking over unused properties, vacant homes in Los Angeles, saying that the coronavirus makes their situation even more dire. Tell me what's happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah, families have gone into properties that are owned by Caltrans. Caltrans purchased hundreds of properties when they were, you know, going to be building a freeway. That freeway never came to be. And
this is the California Department of Transportation, effectively.
Right. And so these are, I mean, what's kind of shocking is that these are government owned that have just been sitting empty while we have, you know, so many families that are homeless and also having to, you know, be packed into other, you know, their families' apartments where there's really no way to, you know, prevent the spread of this virus. So it's been an important action. They have housing, and it's housing that was otherwise sitting empty.
So housing just completely sitting empty that these at the same time that we have this insane housing crisis. The economy gets impacted with the coronavirus, all of this is going to get so much worse, right? I mean, we're seeing projections now of potentially millions of jobs being lost. The Labor Department released data showing that the number of unemployment benefit claims jumped by something like 70,000. And so when people lose their jobs, they lose the ability to pay for housing, whether it's a mortgage payment or monthly rent. And that is necessarily going to push people out into the streets where they then become more vulnerable to infections, because of course, if you're homeless and you don't have proper shelter, you don't have access to clean bathrooms and hand sanitizer, and you might be in a crowded shelter facility when it rains. So these issues are all linked. The government needs to have a plan, right?
Right. And I think that, you know, we've been here before, but I would say that during World War II is when we had a better approach. And that time there was a rent freeze across the country, and you couldn't evict people essentially without, you know, very good cause, which, you know, had to be very, was pretty narrow. You couldn't be doing it because they have a dog and it's not on their lease. And I think that the attitude, particularly of the courts, needs to change. One of the things that I've been very frustrated with is that the courts have the ability to, you know, when a tenant is being evicted and it was for any reason, for they were sick, you know, people rarely don't pay their rent because they just can't be bothered. They usually don't pay their rent because they can't. And we have programs to try and help supplement them. And I think that the court should be on a regular basis, basically granting what we call hardship motions. And they're able to do that sua sponte, which means on their own motion, just off the bench. And instead, we're required to do these very in-depth motions, and they're rarely granted in the residential context, where in a commercial context, so if, you know, some corporation is trying to, I can't move, it's going to destroy my company, then they will let them stay. But when a family is going to be rendered homeless, the courts have been really resistant to granting those. And so I think that this is, you know, we really have to kind of take a moment to really pay attention to all of the different ways in which the system works to make folks homeless. And I think, you know, it starts with the sheriffs, making sure that they are, you know, how much of their resources is being wasted on this. As we know, when the moms were evicted, over $140,000 were spent.
You're talking about the moms group in Oakland?
Correct. And then we have the courts not taking it seriously that it is, that part of their job is to keep people from, it is part of their job to make sure that justice is heard. Those are equity courts. And so the courts are always allowed to weigh equity, and they haven't been doing that. And so I think it's time for that to change. And the courts shouldn't just be there to provide, to protect property. And then we have the jurisdictions who need to, you know, start recognizing that housing is as important as safe food and safe water.
Right. And those issues are all absolutely linked as well. If you don't have a home, you can't stockpile food, of course. And if you don't have a little bit of financial savings, you can't afford to stockpile either. All of these economic insecurities that the U.S. has been plagued by, that have been swept under the rug by Wall Street, by the corporate media, are becoming more and more visible, rising to the surface. And have exposed our vulnerabilities during this crisis, right, Leah?
No, absolutely. And I hope that, you know, sometimes just like during the Great Depression, that things got so bad that, you know, finally, you know, the president at the time, Roosevelt, said, okay, we all need a right to housing and we need a right to minimum, wage and all of these different protections that essentially, you know, the New Deal. And I think that, you know, we've been talking a lot about the Green Deal, but, you know, this is a moment where all the cracks in our society are really bursting open and we've got to take bold action. And I think the fact that our governor can't even protect tenants and say, you know, we need just a bar on evictions for the next few weeks while we're all sheltering in our homes is pretty concerning. And so, as I've been saying, pretty darn disappointing.
Yeah.
Total lack.
So the actions that you recommend, do they need to start at the federal level and then be matched by state and city governments? Not just the issue of eviction moratoriums, but sheriffs not enforcing, eviction courts stopping. I mean, it sounds like you're recommending a complex of policies that need to immediately be put into place at multiple levels?
I mean, they are at multiple levels in that they all are, you know, they're different entities within our government. But I think it's in many ways the kind of basic thing that needs to happen immediately is absolutely under the power of the governor. And so he could take care of it right now. I don't see any big pieces that we need assistance from the federal government. I think when it comes to kind of what do we do the next day when we're all able to leave our homes again, I think that is going to be more related to what the federal government is doing, how we deal with all these mortgages that haven't been paid, what we do about reimbursement of rent. But I think one of the things we really have to get right this time is that we don't sell off all these foreclosed properties, that we can't have a situation where we are securitizing our rental properties and people are investing in them. I mean, that we have to do what other civilized societies, other countries have done, which is they, when there's been foreclosures, that first off the person who's there gets to become a tenant, but then also that those become available to nonprofits or to local governments. But it should not be another opportunity to people to be making money off of essentially, a natural disaster.
Well, Leah, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find out about the work you do at the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment?
Yes, on our website, which,
acceinstitute.org. Thank you so much, Leah.
Great. Thank you.
Leah Simon-Weisberg is our guest. She is Legal Director for Anti-Displacement and Land Use Programs with the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. We've been discussing housing and the coronavirus. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.